You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yes, you're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM, and we are currently at the International Desk.
Yes, and we are actually doing a follow-up story on the current situation in Sudan. Like you said in the introduction, we already kind of covered what was going on back then in April, and that was the ousting of the then president Omar al-Bashir. And just to give people more of context of what has happened, protests in Sudan began in December last year, so 2018, and it all started because of the price of commodities like bread and oil. The price really spiked dramatically, and it became extremely unaffordable for a majority of the population, and so these people took their angers to the streets. So this is how the protests started. Those were mainly peaceful protests, started in the countryside and then gained traction and quickly turned into mass demonstrations reaching the capital city of Khartoum and spreading throughout the entire country. And the message that was originally about the economic crisis quickly evolved, and the chants and the slogans were more and more directed against the then president Omar al-Bashir. And al-Bashir had been in power for more than 30 years, and he was responsible in great part for the humanitarian crisis in the Darfur region that many of our listeners might have heard of in the early 2000s, and also the civil war, the ongoing civil war that led to the secession of the southern part of the country into its own country, now South Sudan. So a very tyrannic president who had reigned pretty much over the country for 30 years, and so more and more calls for his resignation. So after a month of demonstrations, that actually happened. The president was overturned in April this year, 2019, but that only happened because of a military coup. So the generals who had until then remained very faithful to their leader decided to turn against him and sided with the civilians, protected the civilians, sided with them, and decided to oust al-Bashir. The junta that placed itself then at the helm of the transition authority decided to not really respond to calls from civilians for a democratic transitional process. So the opposition was quite well organized. It was mainly made out of people from civil society. They managed to organize themselves, create all these very big peaceful protests. And then when, with the support, I suppose, of the military, managed to get the president to be ousted, and really hoped that there would be a democratic transition in place. But unfortunately for them, the military was quite not exactly on the same page and just didn't want to let go of the power that easily. And so there were ongoing negotiations for about a few weeks to a month to try and sort out the composition, that how that council, that transitional sort of council governing body, would be what it would be made out of. And so the civilians wanted it to be a majority of civilians in this council. Obviously the military wanted it the other way around, and so no common ground was really found, and so these negotiations sort of didn't amount to much. And that kind of went on for a couple of months until June, the beginning of this month, where with the demonstration carrying on, there was hope that something would happen. But then a paramilitary group called the Rapid Support Forces started literally slaughtering protesters. And so we're talking 100 civilians, if not more, killed as a way to shut down a protest. This Rapid Support Forces, this group, it stems from another paramilitary group that committed atrocities for decades in the Darfur region. And they were given some power by the former president, al-Bashir, alongside the military and the intelligence service. So what he did was he tried to sort of split the different powers at play, giving them all a little bit of power so that he would make his government coup-proofed, pretty much, which didn't actually work out the way he intended it to be. But when the heavy protest happened, the generals, the military, sort of teamed up with that paramilitary group, the RSF, to try and then also teamed up with the civilians. But now with al-Bashir gone, the hostility between these groups is ever so present, and it seems like a falling out is very inevitable. And so although this military transition is helmed by Abdel Fattah Burhan, who is a military general, he's in charge of that transitional governing body. It's slightly and slowly being taken over by the RSF and its head, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who seems to be sort of showing his ambition of becoming the new head of state. He's a warlord that he's just literally letting his... He's hiring people to carry the guns and just commit those atrocities in the street of Khartoum. Obviously, the population's really afraid. That is actually leading some people to ask for a return of the military, the sort of normal military, back on the streets to protect themselves from that paramilitary group. And there's a lot of fear that what's happening in Sudan now will become like what happened in Libya as well, with lots of different tribal groups taking over. There needs to be sort of more actions undertaken. More actions undertaken. There was a big strike, a big national strike that led to Khartoum looking like a ghost town pretty much. Very efficient. All the shops were closed. But another reason maybe for the city looking so empty lately is that there's a big communication lockdown. So the internet has been switched off in almost all of the country, and there's now only a few places where people can still come together and have access to the internet, and also encrypted messaging apps like WhatsApp. And those were very important at the beginning to organize the protests. The latest protests that we have, not only in Sudan but around the globe, have always sort of happened because of social media. If you look at Algeria, it's very similar. And so if you turn the tap off and you don't give people access to the internet, it's much harder for them to organize those protests, obviously. And so it's also made it less hidden, and now people, if they do want to organize themselves as demonstrators, they need to do it out in the open, which with those paramilitary groups out there is becoming ever more dangerous.
Yeah, not particularly safe. I think there was an article written earlier this week about the protests in Hong Kong and about how people were essentially making themselves anonymous out of fear of what happens. And I think if you look at the majority of the leaders from the 2014 Hong Kong protests, I think three or four of them are still in jail from their arrests there. And that's when you're looking at protests that aren't necessarily against paramilitary groups. So I think perhaps the repercussions of being exposed and not hidden from these paramilitary groups is a lot higher stakes, perhaps.
Yeah, but so obviously
it's
now you're
a scary state.
You're pushed onto the street, literally. I mean, you can still, you know, you can still stay in your home, but then if you stay in your home with no access to the internet, you're not going to be able to organize.
Exactly.
So you need to be out on the street and meet with people face to face, which means that you're much more obvious. And also it makes it that much easier for the government and for the intelligence services to kind of spy on you.
Certainly.
Obviously, those encrypted apps made it much safer for you if you decided to be against the government, but now it's making it that much harder. So the population's really kind of, rightfully so, I think, becoming more and more scared. And it also means that because of this internet blackout, there's no real access to information at all from within Sudan. So not only can't they organize themselves for protests, but they also are not even really aware of what is exactly going on throughout the country, and so they might not even be aware, if you're not located in Khartoum, you might not even be aware of the atrocities that occurred there last week. So even before that internet blackout, when the military junta was still in control of the situation, it already shut down a lot of their access to information. It made it much more complicated, and it banned certain media like Al Jazeera from covering the protests, and it arrested journalists And so that was despite promising more transparency and more democracy than under al-Bashir's regime. So there was already a tendency to not be extremely transparent with what was going on, but now it's been taken to a whole other level. And so there has been a response from outside of Sudan to try and raise awareness on the situation. That means that a lot of celebrities actually have used their social network to raise awareness. They've put this, if you see people online on social media with a profile picture that's like light blue, it's in honor of one of the protesters that died, and that's kind of been taken over now as a symbol of support for the Sudanese people. And so a lot of information has been posted on social network with a lot of kind of odd numbers as well. It seems because it's really hard to access actual information on the ground in Sudan, a lot of numbers have been thrown out there quite dramatically different from, you know, source to source. So it's actually becoming somehow increasingly hard to figure out what the truth is about the current situation. What makes it even harder in this conflict is that not only do you have the military, the protesters and civilians and those paramilitary groups, but you also have foreign states that are trying to intervene in this complex issue. So you have Egypt, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates that all support the military junta, and they have all promised to offer a financial backing of up to $3 billion, which is an enormous amount of money. But the problem is that all of these countries support different forces within the military. So Egypt supports the generals, the sort of more legitimate military part of the transitional governing body. But Saudi Arabia and the UAE back Dagalo, the head of the RSF. And it's they give his militia guns and money. And that is actually a payback for the RSF support of the proxy war that these countries are fighting in Yemen. So now it's getting really complicated. There's other foreign forces that are trying to meddle in order to find a peaceful resolution to this conflict. The African Union has suspended Sudan and it's threatened the army of sanctions until the generals agree to a civilian-led government. You also have Ethiopia that has tried to mediate peace, but that didn't actually work. And actually, right after the junta met with Ethiopia's prime minister, the opposition leaders were arrested.